racks in front of you, the chair racks. I'd like to read just a little bit more to get the background, a little bit, of what Matthew's gospel tells us as far as this part of the Christmas event has. It's familiar to us. Where is he who is born King of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east and have come to worship him. When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Gathering together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They said to him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for this is what has been written by the prophet. And you, Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the leaders of Judah. For out of you shall come forth a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." Then Herod secretly called the Magi and determined from them the exact time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and search carefully for the child, and when you have found him, report to me, so that I may come and worship him, so I too may come and worship him." After hearing the king, they went their way, and the star, which they had seen in the east, went on before them until it came and stood over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. After coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell to the ground and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they presented to him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned by God in a dream not to return to Herod, the Magi left from their own country by another way. It's an incredible season, Advent, with its culmination today, the birth of Christ and his coming. We have taken a look at some of the pieces. We looked at the angels and the shepherds. We looked at the prophecy of Isaiah. We looked at the conception with Mary and Gabriel coming to her and Joseph, naming him Emmanuel, God with us. And today, we look to the Magi, the three wise men. Now, I don't know about you, but if you are a moviegoer, you probably have seen Avatar, the movie Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar. Maybe, maybe not. Okay. It was an awesome film. I truly enjoyed it. If you go online and look at some of the reviews, there are interesting reviews from the Christian community. There is one famous pastor out in Seattle who just engaged in his congregation to think critically about things, and we do that here, just pointed out how deeply flawed the movie is. And it is. Religiously, it's very flawed doctrinally and theologically. It has pantheism everywhere in it, the worship of everything, that everything is God and we're all connected. The circle of life from the Lion King. It's very pantheistic, and it has some very Buddhistic and Hinduistic elements in it. And there's no way of getting away from that with James Cameron. I mean, it's just there. But it's interesting that he named it Avatar. Do you know what the word avatar means? Do you have your dictionary, Steve, with you? No? Okay. Last night I asked you to look up loud on your smartphones. Avatar is not a new word, although you might think with the advent of the computer when you make your little icon face, you know, your little cartoon characterization, that that's your avatar when you're playing Sim Social or whatever you're playing in Facebook. You know, an avatar, it's a representation of who you are. Well, yeah, that's the definition. And in the movie, the hero becomes a part of the indigenous people on Pandora. He is the avatar. He is the incarnation. But there are other avatars there, and we'll talk about that in a minute, because the definition of the word avatar is incarnation or embodiment of a deity, especially in the Hindu religion that has thousands of gods. Thousands. A good Hindu doesn't even know how many gods they have. Or it's an embodiment or personification as of a principle, attitude, or view of life. In the movie Avatar, the personification of their deity, Awa, was the tree. So it doesn't have to be a person. It can be a thing, but it embodied, it carried with it the notion of deity. Now, maybe you're not that much of a new moviegoer, but maybe there's an old movie you like that plays every Good Friday and Holy Saturday and Easter Sunday. The Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston. Do you remember when the angel of death passed over and they all died, and Pharaoh, Yul Brynner, takes his child and lays the child on that big black obelisk with the dog face? Anubis, I think, is that god. I'm not really good on Egyptian mythology, but he lays the dead child, his son, on that big black dog. That was the embodiment, the avatar of one of their gods. Why would I start a Christmas sermon like this? I think I've lost half of you already. The Magi were sent by God through that astronomical or whatever event it was, the star that led them to the original, the one and only avatar, Jesus Christ. And it's no mistake that in Matthew's gospel that God gives us the question that they ask, where is he who has been born King of the Jews? If you look at the text there, that's why it's short today. When he was born in Bethlehem, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem saying, the form of that verb saying there is that they didn't ask the question once. They asked everybody they ran into, where is he who is born King of the Jews? They kept searching for the original avatar, the one and only, whom God has displayed to them in that star. Now, let's say some foreigners from back east, I don't know, Buffalo somewhere, back east, city of Buffalo, some foreigner comes to town, and he's asking for something infertile. Let's say he's asking for a good place to get gas. Do you know where there's a good place to get gas infertile? Did you guys get up early today? What's the problem here? Yeah. We know where stuff is infertile. We do. Even if, some people are from out of town. Even if you've only visited here, or maybe you grew up here and moved away and now you're home for Christmas, or you know where stuff is infertile. And these Magi come and they're looking for, where is he who's born King of the Jews? What? You need to go up to Crookston. That's where the babies are. You're in the wrong place. So I don't have any idea where is he who's born King of the Jews. So then they somehow it gets back to Herod, and they go to Herod and they say, where is he who's born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star and we have come to worship him. We'll talk about that in a minute. But they're constantly asking to know where Jesus is. They don't even know his name at this point in time. And look at Herod's response. King Herod was troubled, going to ask the king where the King of the Jews is, basically saying, we're looking for your replacement. At least that's Herod's understanding. It's not the Magi's understanding. It's Herod's understanding. And all of Jerusalem was troubled as well. And we could talk about the geopolitical nature of that. But the application for you and I this Christmas Day, 2011, is to be like the Magi and continually, constantly inquire, where is he? No matter where you are or what you're doing today, tomorrow, the next day, we should be like the Magi and seek him. Wise men still seek him. Bumper sticker, right? Wise people still look for Jesus, even if you found him at the cross. So maybe tomorrow at work, You have a boss who's asking you to pick up after the holidays because everything is now stacked up and the inbox is way bigger than the outbox and this has got to get out of here. And I know one of you has retired, so you ain't got to worry about that tomorrow, but that's okay. But do you, when your boss is coming down on you to get all that stuff done, realize and are you looking for he who was born King of the Jews? Maybe you are the boss at work and you have employees who are or aren't pulling their weight. And maybe you need to remember who your king is, who your boss is. And you should ask the question, where is he who is born King of the Jews? Now, I know that we still have another week off, but shortly you're going to have to go back to school, boys and girls, right? And you've got teachers, and they make you do things. They make you take tests, and they make you read 300 pages a month. I remember telling a guy not too long, well, it was last year when the MERP program really got hustle and bustly. I think we were in fourth grade. I think we were talking about Andrew. And his goals were like 300 pages a month. And one of the guys at Northside said to me, I don't know that I've read 300 pages in my entire life. But the teachers make the kids do things. Boys and girls, when your teacher is there making you do stuff and it's hard, are you looking for him who was born King of the Jews? Jesus will help you. He is there with you. You are not alone. Whether it's difficulty in math, I don't know if Jesus was a good mathematician. I know he was a fairly decent carpenter. But I don't know that the way in which the Magi were looking for Jesus would have helped them with their astronomy. But I do know they were looking for Jesus because they had a need. Maybe you're at home and you're celebrating that Christmas holiday and things get out of hand. Or, you know, there's a little trouble. I love my cousin to death. We would always go to my aunt's house. My cousin, when we were little, just had a knack for breaking toys. And if she's listening to this, I'm sorry. I love you, sweetie. But she would break toys. What would you do if your favorite toy that you got on Christmas that you asked for, within 3 hours of getting it, is now broken and unusable? You'd cry. You'd weep. You know, relationships, other people are tough. You know, they're tough. The holidays kind of bring that out because we're all in enclosed spaces. Look for him who is born King of the Jews. He's got it covered. He is the king. And as the king, he rules with ultimate and complete authority, whether you and I are obedient or not. So in those situations where you need the king, look for him. Constantly inquire. What does the king require? What does he want from me in this situation? How can my king help me today so that I might honor and glorify him? And you know why I know that's the follow-up question? Because look at their question. Where is he who is born King of the Jews? For we have come to give him gifts. No, we have come to worship him. Wow. Number one, constantly inquire every day. Look for him who is born King of the Jews. Second, and that's it for today, worship him. Worship him every day, not just for an hour on a Sunday morning that happens to be Christmas. Worship him every day. In Exodus 34, that's the account where the Israelites have escaped Pharaoh. They're in the wilderness. Moses goes up to the mountain to get the Ten Commandments, and Aaron and the rest of the Israelites melt and make the golden calf, and they begin to worship and bow down to it. Moses comes down, and he sees the calf, and he smashes the Ten Commandments, and he goes, and he takes the calf, and he grinds it into powder, and he sprinkles it over the water, and then he says, okay, now you drink it. I don't know that we can digest gold all too well, so you can take the picture from there of what happens to the calf. But then God reinstitutes the covenant, and Moses hammers out the Ten Commandments again. And in Exodus 34, 14 and following, we read. You don't have to turn there. You can just write it down if you want. I'll read. In Exodus 34, 14 and following. But rather, you are to tear down their altars when you go into the land of the Canaanites and they are worshiping other gods. You are to smash their sacred pillars and cut down their Asherim. That's a fertility type thing. For you shall not worship any other god. For the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God. Otherwise, you might make covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they would play the harlot with the gods and sacrifices to their gods. And someone might invite you to eat of his sacrifice, and you might take some of his daughters for your sons. And his daughters might play the harlot with their gods and cause your sons also to play the harlot with their gods. You shall make for yourselves no molten gods. That's a warning. A couple chapters later in Deuteronomy, a couple books later, excuse me, Deuteronomy 6, in verse 13 and following, we read more about worship. You shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship him and swear by his name. You shall not follow other gods, any of the gods of the people who surround you. For the Lord your God in the midst of you is a jealous God. Otherwise, the anger of the Lord your God will be kindled against you, and he will wipe you off the face of the earth. Some pretty serious consequences to worshiping other gods. Psalm 2. I love Psalm 2. Why are the nations in an uproar and the peoples devising a vain thing? The kings of the earth take their stand and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us tear their fetters apart and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he will speak to them in his anger and terrify them in his fury, saying, but as for me, I have installed my king. Light bulb going on? Where is he who was born king of the Jews? Upon Zion, my holy mountain, I will surely tell of the descendants of the Lord. He said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will surely give the nations as your inheritance, and the very ends of the earth as your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron. You shall shatter them like earthenware. Now therefore, O kings, show discernment. Take warning, O judges of the earth. Worship the Lord with reverence and rejoice with trembling. Do homage to the Son, kiss the Son, that he not become angry and you perish in the way, for his wrath may soon be kindled. How blessed are all who take refuge in him. Back to Matthew's gospel. Matthew chapter 15. Starting at verse 1. Then some of the Pharisees and scribes came to Jesus from Jerusalem and said, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread. And he answered and said to them, why do you yourselves transgress the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, honor your father and mother, and he who speaks evil of father or mother is to be put to death. But you say, whoever says to his father or mother, whatever I have that would help you has been given to God. He is not to honor his father or his mother. And by this you invalidated the word of God for the sake of your tradition. You hypocrites, rightly did Isaiah prophesy of you. This people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far away from me. But in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts of men. That's the opposite of what the Magi wanted to do. Worship. Did you know that we, as created beings, are hardwired to worship? We will worship something. No matter what it is, we will worship something. If you take anthropology classes in college, comparative religion. Every society has some form of religion where man tries to reach to God. Some systems better than others, but it's always there. An honest anthropologist will tell you that. About 10 days ago, a man named Christopher Hitchens, plural, died. Do you know Christopher? Do you know of Christopher? Christopher was a reporter and an avowed atheist who wrote a book called God Is Not Great. He got a lot of play on a lot of radio and TV. He wrote for Vanity Fair, and he contracted cancer and went through chemotherapy and was just, you know, it eventually it took him. And in one of the obituaries, I read this statement. An avowed atheist. It was interesting that they called him half Christian and half Jew, complete atheist, complete unbeliever. I don't know how that works, but okay. But in a paragraph about his lifestyle, it said this: Hitchens was an old-fashioned sensualist who abstained from clean living as if it were just another kind of church. Christopher Hitchens, an avowed atheist, and he passed into eternity that way, rebelling with his fist shaking at God, was reported, and they gave evidence of this, as someone who was an old-fashioned sensualist. He lived for fun and pleasure. Who abstained from clean living as if it was just another form of church. Clean living is a religion. So Christopher Hitchens lived a life of sensuality as his religion. We are hardwired to worship. Now, the key difference is right here in the text. Where is he who is born King of the Jews? For we saw his star in the east, and we have come to worship him. Religion is man's way of reaching to God. Christianity is the one and only religion where God reaches all the way down to man and becomes human in Jesus Christ. And he is King of the Jews. And that spurs in the Magi worship. Ardent devotion. Humble devotion to a baby, a child at this point in time. And then later, I read it for you, when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. After coming into the house, they saw the child with Mary. If you read Matthew's gospel, Jesus is always mentioned before his mother. And they fell to the ground and worshiped him. And they opened their gifts, their treasures. The things that meant so much were presented to him. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Constantly inquire about where the king is in your life. And constantly come ready, wake up every day, ready to ardently be devoted to worship him. Not football, not baseball, not clean living, not sensuality, not a church, not a preacher, not a web game, not a book, not a story, not anything. Worship him and him alone. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Where is he who is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and have come to worship him. That's why you're here today. That's why I'm here today. And so as we close, let us continue to worship together by singing number 275. Sing We Now of Christmas, number 275. Would you please stand as we sing together?